Welcome to episode 61 of the Breakdown Wall Podcast. I'm Brandon Cole, he's Sherlock, and he says, indeed.
Yes.
Yes.
I don't have a number pun for 61. Hey, that rhymed. I didn't even intend it to. That's funny.
Don't
okay,
have a pun.
I guess that...
For 61.
For 61.
There you go. It's funny how that worked out, because when you don't have one, you really do have one.
Yep.
Yeah, man. So this week, we got some new stuff to talk about, and it's awesome. And yeah, it's pretty much all awesome, which I really like.
Yay, no negative stuff this week.
No negative stuff.
Kinda.
Woo!
I have one little...
You have a negative... What? You have a negative thing?
Oh, one little thing pertaining to some of the Japanese stuff.
Fire.
Regarding the PS5. But other than that, it's all pretty positive. All
right. Well, we'll get to that because I'm interested to hear this because I haven't found a negative about that. So I'm interested to hear what it is. All right. So, yes, yeah, so a lot of PS5 stuff and some cool accessibility related things too. And another thing as well. So we'll get to all that stuff. It's going to be a regular show. Pretty standard gaming news. Gaming news and disability news.
And probably cats.
Or most likely cats.
Yay, cats.
Expect cats on this show.
Lots of cats.
All right.
Well, just two.
Two particular cats.
Two particular cats.
So let's get right to it with some
gaming news.
Welcome to Gaming News! Okay. It's time for some gaming news. Let's talk about the PS5, Sherlock Tron.
Indeed.
The PS5. So, last week I mentioned the date of October 4th, and I was like, I'm hearing something's going to happen that day. And I wasn't wrong. Something did. On October 4th, multiple Japanese YouTubers were given hands-on time with the PlayStation 5. Apparently they got to bring it into their his houses, even the houses even, and they got to play some stuff, and that's cool. So what came out of that, at least what I saw came out of that, was essentially good things. Number one, confirmation as if we really needed it, but confirmation that Astro's Playroom really is a full game that isn't just a tech demo.
Nice.
They said that it's actually a really good collectible platformer action-y thing, along with being a tech demo.
Nice. That's good.
Yeah. Secondly, what came out of that was some reassuring info from these Japanese YouTubers that got to try this regarding the PS5's both noise and heat issues. And that is to say, neither of them exist, apparently. They're saying this is the quietest and the coolest console they've ever played.
That's good.
One person said after 80 minutes of, you know, play, like nonstop, 80 minutes of nonstop play, the console was still cold.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. And that it's super quiet too.
Nice.
Yeah. So we now have more people that have gotten hands-on time with the PS5, which is cool. I wish it wasn't just Japanese YouTubers. The negative, of course, is all the videos were in Japanese, but there's plenty of published information about what they found. That's translated, so you know, it's out there.
So the negative thing I saw floating around, and apparently Japanese people are very upset about this. Sony is in Japan going to adopt the Western way of
they're mad about that. Huh? I saw that they were going to do that.
Oh, they're pissed.
I saw they were going to do it. I didn't know that that would make them so angry.
Huh. Oh, they're not happy. Like, people are even, like, saying that they're not going to buy the system because of it.
Wow.
Which I think is silly, but...
I think it is, too.
But...
I get being, like, displeased with it. I think it comes down to...
somebody explained it. I forget who it was. I saw a YouTuber last night talking about it, and they kind of explained it that it kind of makes a little sense where culturally a circle means yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Confirm, and like a cross or, you know, basically means no, cancel that, or, you know, it's a bad thing.
Right.
So it's kind of a combination of probably like muscle memory and just like, no, that kind of offends my cultural sensibilities, whatever.
Yeah.
It also may have to do with maybe the Japanese are kind of not happy that they're seeing that like they're becoming more, that Sony is becoming more Americanized, and they don't like that either.
Yeah. That could be too. I mean,
the Japanese are very tend to be very traditionalists. They're very like patriotic, and you know, they tend to, a lot of people tend to, you know, lean towards Japanese centric, you know, things and ways of thinking.
Yeah.
So
I guess that makes sense. Even so though, like, I don't know.
But you also had some people, you know, Japanese people saying, it's whatever, I'll get used to it in 5
minutes. Right, right, right. Because, like, to me, like, I get where you're coming from. I get where they're coming from, I think. But ultimately, I just feel like, yes, okay, be displeased about it. Even make your displeasure known to Sony. But at the same time, isn't it ultimately about the games? Like
the reason, yeah, I mean, the reason they're doing it is so that developers don't have to keep track of
coding. Yeah. Cause they want to make everything universal. So this way developers can just make one version of the game and be done.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. I get it. I do get it.
Yep.
I get both sides, I think, but you know,
I think this is kind of a nothing burger.
A nothing burger.
Yeah, I know. Hi, Bob.
Says, it's not nothing. I want
people
to
get. People will be mad about it for, you know, maybe a week, and then they'll get over it.
Yeah, They'll see a game on their TV screen and be like, you know, maybe I will press X to start this game. You know, yeah. So yeah, they are switching universally to X and circle, X for confirm, circle for cancel, like it is in the U.S. currently. So yeah, it's . Okay, I get it. It's a thing, but I don't think it's going to be a big thing ultimately.
No, it's just funny that such a little change is just sparking that much
anger,
outrage.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But mostly it was the one that I saw was really really positive and just loved the experience. So it was pretty good.
That's good.
I actually watched one of the Japanese videos. Number one, because I wanted to see if I could translate any of it because I'm trying to learn Japanese. And I got some stuff. I got some stuff, but you know, wasn't like I couldn't like translate the whole video or anything. I'm not that good yet.
You can pick out some phrases here.
Yeah, I picked out some phrases, and I wanted to do it anyway, just kind of for the tone of the video. Like I wanted to
see how excited they sounded.
Yeah, and they sounded like they were having a blast with it.
I love how animated Japanese people get. They get so much more animated.
I know. They really are. They really are.
I love it.
They're very animated. And these guys, this is like two guys on this channel trying it out, and they're playing Astro's Playroom. They're just going, "Oh!"
Yeah.
Oh! Yeah, it's great. It's really, really good. I really enjoyed it. It was just like pure excitement about this thing, which is just it was awesome. I mean, I bet they were shocked they got to try it at all.
Like, yeah.
This is a specific deal for Japanese YouTubers. So they got a deal, man.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. So next thing, speaking of Japan,
Japan,
we have finally received, ladies and gentlemen, the PlayStation 5 hardware teardown that many people have been waiting for a long time.
Nice.
We now know not only what the outside of the PS5 looks like, but we know what the inside looks like too. And we know deep inside. I mean, in the video that Sony released, the hardware architect, the Japanese.
So we get to see all the crazy cooling systems and stuff that they use.
Cool. Yes. The Japanese hardware architect was the one that did the video, and he completely deconstructs the PS5 in front of you.
Oh, that's cool.
Pulls the whole thing apart.
Nice.
And he shows how easy it is, too. So
access
to everything being easy was actually intentional in the design of the PS5, apparently.
Huh.
Easy fixing, easy repairing, blah, 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 blah. Couple of really cool notes here.
Are they going for like a DIY thing? Like if you need to like fix a part or something, you can just order a...
Maybe, possibly that. Because it is really easy to access everything. I mean, I'm talking everything. Even the RAM in this PS5 is easy to access. Couple of really cool points. The exhaust fans have... well, first of all, there's... I'm trying to remember exactly what it is. I think it's two fans on the sides, if I remember correctly, and then the big exhaust fan in the back, combined with a heat sink that is a liquid cooling system heat sink.
Yeah, I heard it was going to have a liquid cooling thing.
Liquid cooling is confirmed now. It is absolutely liquid cooled. But one really cool note is that they have dust catchers as well. And they have built these things into the PS5 so that when, you know, every so often, maybe every couple months or however often you want to do it, but every so often, there are two holes specifically there. They specifically exist so you can vacuum out the dust catchers.
Huh.
It'll just pull them up through those holes. Pull the dust up through the holes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of like, was it the PS3? You remember that whole like dust event that happened like 10, 12 years ago with there was like some dude's PS3 and it was just like a mountain of dust somehow that like got into the system.
I don't remember that.
That was so weird. Like,
I don't remember that at all, but I'm not saying it didn't happen. I don't remember it. But yeah, I think if you know, since that was a thing, I'm guessing then that's probably the reason that this has the dust catchers.
Yeah.
To avoid stuff like that. Another cool note, when I say easy, I mean really easy. If you want to swap the hard drive out, you unscrew the PS5 from the stand, because you can put it on the stand if you want to set it on its side and stuff like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You unscrew that, it's one screw. I think he said it's one screw. You can store the screw in the stand itself. The stand is a little compartment for the screw if you pull it out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's clever.
Nice.
And if you want to swap the hard drive out when there are compatible hard drives to swap with, to pull off the side of the PS5, you literally go to the back corner of the panel and lift.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yep.
That's crazy.
It's meant to be, taken apart by users if they need to for something like hard drive swapping with compatible drives.
Huh.
So there you go.
Easy.
Also, the USB situation. The front of the PS5 apparently has two USB ports. One of them is USB A, which is USB-C compatible, so you can use it for, you know, charging controllers and whatnot. But it also has a straight up USB-C port. Which makes me wonder if there's going to be some kind of USB C to C devices that can connect to it too. Probably maybe the new camera connects that way. I don't know.
Oh yeah, probably.
And then the back of the PS4 has two additional USB A ports, as well as a LAN port and a power port and such.
Yeah. Nice.
And HDMI port. But that's it. As predicted, BT dubs. As predicted, there is no optical. Optical is gone. Optical is gone. We saw this coming.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, in case anyone was curious, and in case anyone didn't know, there's no optical port. You will not be plugging in your Astro Mix Amp to this PS5.
Yep.
Because
it'll still be a USB, though.
Yeah, but you're not going to get the virtual surround that way, though, because that's not how that amp works. Misty was pointing out you can still do it through USB, but with the way that amp works on consoles, because that works on PC, because you install drivers to make it work on PC.
Astro will figure something out.
Astro might figure something out. They could partner with Sony and make it work, I suppose. They could.
They probably will. I wouldn't surprise me if they did.
But they also, like, Sony might just say, no, we don't have to do that, because our freaking console does 3D audio anyway.
Just tell them to plug that into the controller. They probably just expect you to get a pair of headphones just plugged into the controller.
That's what I'm saying. Astro will figure it out. It's their hardware that needs to be compatible with it.
Yeah, but they need, if it's going to work via USB, then they need to partner with Sony to get the drivers, available on PS5, I would think. But yeah, so there's no optical port, just power HDMI and USB ports and LAN ports as well. And yeah, let's not forget, folks, that it's a big son of a gun. PS5 is big.
Biggest console ever made, apparently.
Biggest console ever made. It is large, which is why it has the stand. And apparently, the way that it's built, you use the stand no matter which way you're setting the PS5. If you're setting it on the horizontally, you still use the stand, but you tilt it a different way than it's tilted if you're setting it vertically. Yeah, so I guess it can tilt forwards or like upwards or something.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Interesting stuff, man.
That's so weird that you actually it's so big it actually needs a stand.
Yeah, it needs a stand, apparently.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And the whole video of this teardown where we saw everything, like he took out the Blu-ray drive too, the freaking HD Blu-ray drive, everything. Yeah. The whole video was 7 minutes long.
Wow.
And that's only because
that's
only because he was explaining things as he did it.
Wow.
He could have taken apart faster than that. So yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. There you go. So it's nice. We finally got the hardware teardown.
Only about another month. We have like just over a month until it's
Over a month. That's right. It's on the horizon, man. It's almost here.
Oh my god.
It's almost here. So don't worry though, we're not done with PlayStation News. Oh no, not yet. There is but one more thing. And this came out of nowhere. I certainly didn't see this coming, but here you go. PlayStation has decided to change Bob, apparently. PlayStation has decided to change the way trophies work.
Hmm.
They are changing the trophy system in a couple of different ways. Number one, the level system for trophies is going to be different. It's going to be, instead of 1 to 100, it's going to be 1 to 999. The way levels are calculated is also changing. So if you're, like, for instance, right now, if you're level 12, the example they gave is if you're level 12, you're going to be in the level 200s or so when this is done. The idea is they want you to get a level more often so you can feel the awesomeness of I got another level.
You know? Yeah. No, okay, I get it.
So it's
they want you to feel like you're accomplishing more.
Yeah, so you're getting more levels up more often instead of having to wait like a year to get a new level because it takes so many points from the trophies to get another level.
Yeah, no, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I can see that.
They're also making they are changing the calculations for future trophies as well. So platinums are going to actually give you more than they used to. They're going to be more rewarding.
Nice.
And things like that. And your profile will now have a trophy level icon along with the level number. Now there was one before, but it was always the same thing. I guess it was always like a gold star or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But now there are going to be different levels of that depending on your level. So like level 1 to 99 is one, level 100 to 300 is another one, and 300 to 600 is another one, and 600 to 998 is one. And then 999 is a platinum icon. Ah. If you actually get level 999 in trophies, you get a platinum icon for it.
Nice. Okay, that's cool.
Now here's what blew my mind though. I'm saying all this, and you're probably thinking, okay, so this is going to happen when the PS5 comes out, right?
Yeah, you would think.
Nope. It's happening today.
Okay.
It's happening today.
That means they've been planning this for a long time.
Yeah, every system that shows trophies will start showing the trophies in a new way later this afternoon. Wow. That's what they said.
So they've been planning this. That means they kept this to their chest for a long time.
Yep. This has probably been the last software update probably enabled this functionality, but they just have to, you know, hit a button.
And just stealth, you know, like didn't say anything. Just it's here.
Yep. So PS4 will show it this way. Even PS3 will show it this way.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Yep. New trophy system. It's not going to change. It's funny. I actually like this because I'm one of those people that really likes hearing that trophy sound.
I do too.
And they absolutely reference that in the article. Like, don't worry, we're not changing the sound of
that. That's a satisfying sound, man.
It is. It's a good sound. So yeah, trophy system changes today. So I'm probably going to be like level. My God, I'm already was up pretty far. I think I'm probably gonna be like level 300 in the new system. Awesome.
Is there a way to see that if you're blind? I haven't.
Yes, you can. There's a couple ways. You can see it on the actual PlayStation site where you look at your profile. And I believe you can see it. You know what? I don't know if you can. You can see your friend's trophy levels on the console, but I don't know if you can see yours on the console if you're blind. You can if you're sighted, of course, but.
Yeah,
I can't think of a way you can see it if you're blind, but you can see all your friends' trophy level. but if you pull up your profile on the actual site, you can see it on the website. So I guess that'd be the way.
Man, I'm dying to know how much, like, new, if any, accessibility stuff is there for PS5.
I can't wait. I feel like it's going to be more. And here's why I think that. Because I've been saying this
gathering feedback not too long ago about. I feel like that was a thing that happened.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's definitely been feedback back and forth on this, of course, but I feel like I've mentioned before that I feel like it's going to be better, but I haven't really explained why. And I think the reason it's going to be better is because keep in mind that the PS5 is already going to have as a feature already announced a voice assistant. You're literally going to be able to ask the PS5 stuff like freaking Siri and stuff, and it'll tell you stuff.
Nice.
That tells me that it has text-to-speech for that, you know, already. So
it's like, why wouldn't you?
On that. With the power of the PS5 that already exists, you can't use the. The OS is taking up too much RAM and we can't do text speech in this menu. Excuse.
That's not an excuse.
I don't think you can look at the PS5 and say, oh no, we can't do text to speech.
this thing doesn't have enough power for that.
Yeah, there's not enough power for the text. But don't worry, you want a ray tracing 4K enabled game. We got you. But text to speech, no, boy. no, I don't think that's going to happen. So that's why I think it's going to be better, though. And also, it's worth mentioning, and I can't confirm this. Don't quote me on this because I have no concrete information here. But as far as I know, the voice assistant is a universal feature. It's not like just a US only thing. So we could very well also see text to speech in more countries outside the US.
Good.
Yeah.
I freaking hope so. Because that, so many people. I feel so bad for the international people that like are getting into some of these games like 13 Sentinels and Last of Us. I don't know how to like,
how do I launch the game? You know,
yeah,
it sucks. It sucks to have to deal with that. I'm happy to answer those questions for people if they come to me with them, but it's unfortunate that it has to happen, you know, at all.
Yeah.
But
precisely why I didn't get the PSP Go back in the day. Cause I was like, nah, I can't, I just
can't even
give my UMDs.
Yep. I'm okay with my UMDs. I'll take it.
Yep.
But yeah, that's why I've been so positive lately. Well, like I've seen some people being super negative, like, oh my God, there's not gonna be anything. Just forget about it. No, I don't think so. I think there's gonna be, I think more. I'm gonna optimistically say I think there's gonna be more.
I hope so.
So yeah, trophies changing today. It's good. It's crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's
that's happening today.
Yep.
Wow.
Just happening today.
stealth drop. Just stealth drop. Here you go.
Here, all trophies are different now. Here you go.
Cool.
They're like, they also reassured people who, you know, just in case, just to alleviate concerns, like, don't worry, the trophies you have aren't going away. They aren't changing. The values are still the same. You know, you still earn those trophies. They're not taking anything away from you. It's just changing the way it works now. So, yeah. Okay, next thing. In gaming news, moving away from PS5, Baldur's Gate 3 Early Access has been released as of yesterday.
Whee.
Baldur's Gate, I want to talk about this in gaming news because Baldur's Gate is one of those series, one of those franchises that is just it probably like helped create the RPG genre as it is.
What, late 90s, I think, was when the first one came out?
Yeah, I think mid to late 90s, like 96 or 7, first one.
Because I want to say it was kind of around the time when, like, Planescape Torment came out.
Yeah.
And it was kind of that boom of, like, Western
RPGs. Yeah, Icewind Dale came out around that then, too, you know.
Planescape Torment is so good, if you haven't seen a playthrough
of that. I have not seen a full playthrough. I've seen a partial playthrough of Planescape Torment.
It's so good.
Mostly like the beginning area of the game.
I'm gonna play it eventually.
Yeah, yeah, we do have it. It's actually in that big collection that I got from Misty a long time ago. So, yay, we have it. We have all the things.
All the things.
So Baldur's Gate 3 has been a game that people have wondered, you know, if it would ever be made for, like, more than 20 years. Like, 25
years. Baldur's Gate 2 was, like, what, 2001?
Yeah, 2001, something like that, yeah. And Baldur's Gate 2 is a masterpiece.
Because it was on everything even back then.
Even by today's standards, Baldur's Gate 2 is a masterpiece. I fully believe that.
It's a great game.
It's amazing what you can do in that game. Depending on your class in Baldur's Gate 2, there's an entire story that you can do is basically a side quest, but it's like a huge quest line for every class. Like,
that's cool.
If you're a thief, just as one example, this is, I think, one of the best examples, but if you're a thief in Baldur's Gate 2, you can end up running a thieves' guild.
Ah.
And it will actually be a source of income, like constant income for you, because you're running this thieves' guild.
That's cool.
And you can actually manage it like a thieves' guild. You can send people out on assignments and everything. It's crazy. And that's just for thieves.
Maybe I'm remembering this wrong, but I seem to remember watching my brother play back in the day. And, like, he was talking about how, like, sometimes your party members, like, aren't all buddy-buddy. Like, sometimes they hate each other, but they're just around just because, you know, they're helping you, but they like hate each other's guts. Like,
oh, I mean, even Baldur's Gate 1 did that. In fact, there's party members in Baldur's Gate 1 where if you keep them together for too long, there will be one final argument and then they'll fight each other to the death.
Wow.
Yep. That's one. That's in Baldur's Gate 1.
Wow. Yeah. That's actually really cool.
Yeah, it's tremendous. It's a tremendous, tremendous series. And now here we are. It's been like 25, 26 years, and now Baldur's Gate 3 is a reality and is available for early access. Made by a different studio, though. It's made by Larian Studios, who made the apparently tremendous... We haven't played these either, but the apparently tremendous Divinity Original Sin games. And...
Oh, I saw my buddy Ebs Nerdity play some Divinity... One of the Divinity games like a year ago, and it looked pretty good.
Yeah, from what I've heard, it sounds like it's really cool, but we haven't played them yet. So Baldur's Gate 3 also is bringing things into the new D&D generation. So it's still D&D, just like Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 were, but Baldur's Gate 3 is done in D&D 5th edition. So basically the current iteration of D&D.
Yeah.
And man, oh man, when you're playing Baldur's Gate 3, you are playing D&D. Like, like, really. Misty's been playing some of the early access build, and it's great. Like, there's a narrator, okay? there's a narrator that is essentially your DM, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, if you have an event happen, they'll read the, you know, well, not read, but they'll talk about the event that's happening. Then you'll have like a check that you have to do, like you have to do an investigation check or something like that. And then if you, whether you succeed or fail at the check, the narrator then says like what happens when you succeed or fail at the check.
Oh, wow.
Like a DM would.
That's cool.
So it's super cool. So it actually shows a dice roll too. When you have those checks, you actually do a dice roll. It shows what your result is, what the target is, all that stuff. and basically every line is voiced. Now I did have one misconception when I first watched the first gameplay reveals of Baldur's Gate 3. I was under the assumption that your character's lines were also voiced, like fully voiced, like everything you said was voiced too.
Yeah.
That isn't the case. But it's kind of weird because some of them are. Like, if your character is on their own and they find something or mention something, then that line is voiced. But during conversations with someone else, your lines are not voiced, which is interesting.
Kind of weird.
It is kind of weird. Like, it is certainly a lot more dialogue than Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 ever had. Yeah. Ever. Like, ever, ever. Because non-player characters' lines are voiced, every single one. All of them.
Nice.
And there's a lot of stuff that ties into like your origins and stuff like that. So the examples that they gave in the gameplay trailers or the gameplay reveals they did before aren't available in early access. But apparently in the final game, you can literally just pick from a list of pre-created characters if you don't want to worry about character creation. But the incentive for doing that or for trying the game that way, even if you're someone who likes creating characters, the incentive for trying to play the game with the characters they've created for you is that they will actually have specific dialogue lines and like story stuff and quest stuff and everything like that.
Oh, wow.
So apparently one of the characters is going to be a vampire and he's going to have to deal with the constant struggle to not feed on your other party members.
So, wow, that's cool.
It's just gonna be—it's gonna be an option in the final game. It's crazy. but I think where the game gets really crazy is the combat. Before the Baldur's Gate series and the games like it have basically been, you know, turn-based. Yes, and it is all based on dice rolls, and it still is. But there still was a lot less you could do. You could run around, but you couldn't like. You couldn't really use cover. You couldn't jump onto things, stuff like that. In this game, because those rules exist for D&D 5th edition, they exist in this game as well. So, like, if you're an archer and you have the higher ground, then you have advantage during your next attack. If you are behind cover, your armor class is increased for your opponent's attack. So it's harder for them to hit you. You know, stuff like that.
Nice.
Not only that, they went full on get creative mode and they said, we're going to let you try to use everything you possibly can. And that includes like the environment. So if there is like, just as an example, just hypothetically, if you were fighting some creatures in Baldur's Gate 3 in a library, you could pick up a book and throw it at them. If that's what you want to do, you can do it. In the early gameplay reveal they did, they actually showed one crazy example of like, okay, I'm very low on health. I have no more arrows left and I only have this bow. So what am I going to do? So what he does is he takes off his boots that he's wearing as his armor and he throws his boots at the enemy. That's how crazy it can get. And they said it goes full on, like stuff can interact with each other. So, like, if you have the grease spell or actual grease and you pour that somewhere or throw it at an enemy and then use a flame spell, it will cause massive grease fire type damage.
Yeah, because you can do that in that kind of stuff in D&D.
Yep, you can. So spells will interact, things will interact with the environment, all that stuff.
That's cool.
It's awesome. It's really, really cool.
Nice.
It's not easy, I'll tell you that. From what we've played so far, it's not. I don't think it's intended to be easy, but it's. I'm just saying, it's not.
Yeah,
it's not easy. You know, it's definitely you're playing D&D. Stuff can go wrong.
Yeah,
you know, you can roll a one.
Yep.
You know, and when you do, bad things happen. But it's definitely true to the D&D spirit. It's true to the, it seems to be true to the Baldur's Gate spirit, although right now this story is very, very different from both the first two games. It's so different. But it's still super intriguing, like those games were. So I'm definitely interested to see where it goes.
Very cool.
Yeah, Baldur's Gate, man. Classic. It's back. Early access currently, for those interested, is early access on Steam and Stadia, I believe. I believe those are the two places where early access is available. I think, I don't remember if it's available on the Epic Store, but I know it's available on Steam and Stadia.
Nice.
So if you want to play some Baldur's Gate 3, you can right now. You still pay for the full game, but you'll have it, you know, for when it comes out. Like it's yours once you pay for it, but you can access it now in early access and help them fix all the bugs. And there are some bugs.
Yeah,
we've encountered some bugs already. Misty had a funny one this morning. She was playing a little bit this morning. She had a funny one where she got hit. Her character got hit, and for some reason, in reaction to getting hit, her character just jittered around for like several seconds. Like
completely warped out.
Oh, completely warped out. Like I'm out. Bye.
No. Not like disappeared. Like turned into some weird object.
Okay. I thought it was just because I heard like it was playing like the footstep sound over and over again. So I thought it was like jittering around.
It worked out. Like. The whole character, like, it didn't look like a person. Like
oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, like, auditorially, it was like, the hit sounds like... But the weird thing is it fixed itself. Like, it stopped after a few seconds.
It fixed the sound.
It didn't fix the character? Oh, no. It didn't fix the character. I thought it was fixed.
Like, it was just there. Like, the big fucking word thing. It wasn't even a shape that I could call anything.
Oh, all right.
God.
Hey, Larian, I think you might want to work on that.
I got hit super hard, apparently.
Yeah, super hard. You're not even a person anymore. Man. Larian, you're going to want to work on that there.
That's a...
early access.
Yeah, early access. You know what? I almost forgot about this. This is actually really cool. One of the coolest things about this game that I've seen that I've never, ever seen in any other RPG ever. Once you've created your character, it asks you, who do you dream of? Who are you attracted to? Huh. And when it said that, I was thinking, oh, okay, this is just a clever way of doing, you know, which gender do you prefer kind of thing, that kind of situation. That's what I thought it was. It's not that.
Hmm.
You then create a second character.
Huh.
That is the answer to that question. So it's like, what you're doing is you're creating a story arc for yourself by creating a second character that you apparently dream about. And I assume, because of the way these things tend to work in video games, I assume probably is real in like the story of the game, but exists somewhere.
It's not a full character.
You're right. You don't get to create a full character.
You don't get to like decide what class they are and stuff like that.
Huh.
You just get to decide whether they're male or female. So it is... deciding
gender,
what gender you're attracted to, but also what race they look like.
What race they are and how they look is what you get to choose. That's all you get to choose for the second character.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I imagine somewhere in the story, this character you've created, this second character, is real somewhere, and you'll probably run across them at some point.
Huh.
So isn't that interesting?
I've never seen something like that before. That's really cool.
Yeah. So it's like you're designing your co-protagonist without knowing anything about them.
Yeah.
It's super interesting.
Who says they're a protagonist?
That's true. That's a good point.
You don't know anything about this person.
That's true. They could
you're
be
right.
A villain.
You could have been designing the villain. What if you're designing the final boss of the game?
Oh my god.
You're right. You're exactly right. You could be.
Hmm.
That's an intriguing idea.
Man.
This Baldur's Gate 3, man. It's going to be great. Like, it seems to me like it already is, but I mean, like, when this thing comes out, it comes out of early access, it's going to be tremendous, I think. Because they're going to lock down these bugs. They're going to fix the whole jittery, non-person problem.
Yeah. That's just one of those silly, you know, early access quirks that, you know, like, oh, you know, Yeah, you kind of expect that from an early access.
Oh, they warn you. They flat out warn you. They say, you know, hey, when you first launch the game, it's like, hey, this is early access. Just don't forget that, all right?
Yep.
You know? So, Baldur's Gate 3, it's going to be great. Look forward to it. Look forward to it, man. And enjoying it as it is right now, because we're playing the early access build right now. So
nice.
Even now, it's already cool. Alrighty then. That is all I have for gaming news today.
Yep.
But don't worry. We have a pretty big topic coming up on
Accessibility News.
Welcome to
Accessibility News.
So, Sherlock, there's a game. There's a game that I've really liked it for a long time. I really liked it since it came out early access and the reviews started coming out and everything like that. But I still, you know, I still kind of I liked it from afar. I was like, man,
I had never heard of this game until Ryan started playing it. So. Oh. This game completely went under my radar.
I had heard of it because actually Misty bought the game, no kidding, when it was in early access, thinking that we'd just play it later.
Yeah.
And she will play it later. She'll just use a different save slot. So she already had it. And I was like, I started hearing the reviews of this game and how cool it was and why it was cool. And I was like, man, this sounds really cool. It sounds really awesome and fun. And so I started checking out little bits and pieces. Like I checked out one of Blind Ryan's streams. I checked out who was it? There was someone else that I checked out that was playing it too. Oh, it was Illegally Excited. Played it as well. And I realized, wait a minute, this game might just be playable by the blind. And I was like, huh? What? Really? And I had to try it. And I did try it, and it is.
Yep.
So the game we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, is Hades.
And I had no idea until you tweeted that, and I was like, oh, wait, what?
I was like, I'm playing Hades. You're like, whoop.
Okay.
Yep.
And I immediately went and bought it, and I couldn't even play it yet.
Wait, what?
Yep. Yeah, Sherlock immediately went and bought it, and he couldn't even play it yet. He's like, oh, my God. So... Yeah, folks. Yeah. Hades is playable.
It's really good.
By the blind people of the world. So Hades is a roguelike game where you are Prince Zagreus, the son of Hades, who's decided that he's had enough. He's had enough of the underworld living. And he's going to escape the underworld and go to the surface and stay there and be happy. So he begins fighting his way out of Hades' domain and up to the surface. And that is where the roguelike element comes in. So you go through those fights as escape attempts. You're probably going to die a lot, but that's kind of the point.
You're meant to.
Yep. One of the things that make this game the coolest is the way you progress the story is through your multiple attempts and through your deaths as well.
Yep.
The story progresses because you attempt multiple times to escape, and because when you die, you go back to the House of Hades, and you can interact once again with each character there, which they always have something new to say, it seems like.
Dude, it's crazy how much these guys, like, emote and...
It's kind of like Infinity Blade.
Talk?
And... Is it always Infinity Blade like that, too? I didn't even know that.
Oh, really?
The one for
the iOS one.
iOS,
yeah. I didn't know it worked
like
that.
You die, and originally you're like your character.
Oh, that's
right.
Then you're like their son. That's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Oh wow.
Continues the story.
That's right. I remember that now.
Trying to get vengeance for their father.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
It's like that, but I think it's on a larger scale because like Infinity Blade has that angle, yes, but it has like that's what it is all the time, like. If that second character dies, then it's his son, and third character
it's
his son.
It's like taking that concept further.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You still further the story even if you die.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, yeah, yeah. So every character is super emotive. and everyone is very different. And also, some of the interpretations of these characters are different from what you might expect. And I actually like that. I'm glad they were willing to take, you know, a little bit of dramatic license with this stuff, because it makes it, you know, feel like a more diverse world, I guess. I don't know if you want to call it that, yeah. But like, for instance, the
characters have character.
Yeah, exactly. I think the biggest example of that is Medusa. Now, when you think of Medusa, you think of evil Gorgon who wants to turn you to stone.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know who Medusa is in Hades? In the game Hades?
Huh.
You have not met her yet, I don't think.
No.
She is a cleaning lady. And she is
what?
She is the bubbliest, but most frightened little Gorgon you could possibly imagine. A typical interaction with Medusa goes something like, "Hi, Prince. I was just cleaning up the lounge area, and I'll get to your room really soon."
Oh my god.
That's Medusa, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow.
That's Medusa.
And then you have Skelly, who's like this Bronx, like,
yeah,
skeleton guy.
Yeah, Bronx, New York accent.
Like,
hey, boyo. You're supposed to be pounding me in the pavement right now. Like, he takes his job super seriously. Like, his job is to take your beatings. That is his job. He is your training dummy. And he is, like, proud of it. Like, he's like,
yeah,
hey, you could be hitting me and not talking to me so much. Like, but he also gives you tips too. Like, he'll give you like combat tips for dealing with certain enemy types and stuff. And that's nice. And apparently he has a really neat gift that I need to get. I don't have his keepsake yet. So, when you're, let's talk about, I guess, more about the blind experience. When you're blind, first of all, highly recommend you use God mode.
Yep.
God mode does not work the way you think. It is not you are immortal and cannot die, because that wouldn't make any sense for the story.
All right.
If it worked like that, you literally could not advance the plot. So in Hades, what God mode does...
It's like that Zenkai boost that like Saiyans get almost.
Yeah, you're right, it is.
Except you don't get, that's exactly, you don't get strength. You don't get strength.
No, you don't get strength. That's
you just
true.
Get HP and defense.
Yeah, that's true. So in Hades, God mode works like this. It's basically just as Sturlock said. You will still die. You'll still die a lot. But every time you die with God mode on, you will gain a God mode level. And every God mode level gives you additional resistance to damage. So you actually technically don't get HP. You just get more and more resistant.
You just get resistant.
Every time. Yeah. You get more and more resistant every time to damage. Every single time. And it's each individual boost is really small, because you're meant to play Hades a bunch. So
yeah,
it's really, really small boosts that are eventually going to be cumulative into, you know, being able to progress further and further and further in the story. And further in the escape attempts as well. So
yep.
There are several weapons you can use. Currently my favorite is the bow. Because Hades also has aim assist. Aim assist, ladies and gentlemen, aim assist.
Yay.
And it's aim assist that actually works. Hey, how about that?
You're right.
Now, the only thing, one small criticism of the game is that it does not work for casting. So you have a little cast ability, too. You can press B and cast, like, a magical spell. But it does not auto-aim. It doesn't aim the cast. It only aims the bow. I don't understand why, but it's the way it is.
You would think the cast would be auto-aim, too, but...
And you'd think, but here's the thing. I have a suspicion as to why it's not, and I don't like it, but this is just the reality of the situation. There is a blessing that you can get from, I believe it is Aphrodite. I believe it's from her, which makes the cast auto-aim.
Ah.
It says your cast will seek and have a chance of doing 10% critical damage.
Ah.
So, yeah. There okay. you go. There yeah. you go.
There you go.
But... you may still be asking, okay, but still, why is it playable? Okay, so here we go. Let's get into why it's playable by the blind. I mean, of course, God mode helps, but there's so much more stuff that helps with this game.
Yeah.
Number one, all the navigation is basically top-down navigation. Number two, all the areas, none of the areas are particularly large. I mean, the House of Hades is probably the largest area that you'll ever be in the game.
Yeah.
But even that you can learn over time. I've learned how to get to almost every important place I need to get to in the House of Hades. So it's not that difficult to navigate once you've gotten used to it, once you've learned it. It'll take some doing, and you'll miss some people sometimes, but you'll get there. Number three, so many things have ambient sound effects. Every character has, except for one, has an ambient sound effect. Nyx is the only one that does not make a sound when she's just standing around. The only one. Hades himself is always writing at his desk. Hypnos, the character that will greet you when you come back from when you die every time, he always falls asleep. So just listen for the snoring. You'll find him. Cerberus, the three-headed dog guardian of Hades, is always kind of, you know, like making dog breathing noises. Really, really large dog breathing noises. So he's pretty easy to find, too. Even Medusa, Miss very, very terrified cleaning lady, constantly nervous and terrified cleaning lady. She's always worried she's going to get fired, by the way, too. So that's the thing you have to deal with. She always hums before she sees you. If she sees you, she gasps and it makes a little magical noise, and then she stops humming. So if you hear that, you want to try to hit R1 as quickly. R1 is your interact button in this game. RB, a right bumper, is your interact button in this game. You want to hit that as quickly as possible once she sees you, because she actually stops making noise after that. She won't hum anymore if she's seen you. So that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
But so many ambient sound effects. Even items on the ground have ambient sound effects. This is especially noticeable in Charon's shop, where you can purchase things with the money you get during escape attempts. Almost every item that he sells will give you a sound effect at the position where it is, so you can go find it and get it that way. And that's how it works. That shop does not work like a menu. You actually go pick up the thing you want, and you automatically lose the amount of money that it would cost you. That's how those shops work. So, like, if you want more health and you hear the sound of a heartbeat, that's literally what you do. You head towards that sound, you pick it up, and you get your health. And you pay the price for it, and then you lose.
I do like, too, by the way, that you can see it with OCR how much health you have. I love that.
Yeah.
That actually works.
Yep. It sure does.
I can see, oh, I have, I only have 8 health out of 50. I'm probably going to die soon.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the end of this. This has been a good run. but yeah, there's even, there's sound effects for keys you can pick up that help you unlock more weapons and help you unlock certain things as well. Like, you can, reset your talents in the mirror with enough keys and things like that. But so keys have a lot of uses. There's sound effects for gems. There's sound effects for darkness. There's sound effects for nectar. All these are sound effects that happen when they're on the ground. And I mean, there's also sounds for when you pick them up. But what I'm talking about right now is just the sounds they make on the ground. All these things make sounds just by being there.
Diablo.
Yeah.
Take notes.
Right. Take notes, Diablo. Yeah. Exactly. There's even a sound effect. I don't know if you've encountered this one yet, Sturlock, but one of the things that Charon can occasionally sell is more blessings. So, like,
oh, nice. Actually never found Charon.
Oh, you haven't found a shop yet. Okay. You will. It's going to happen randomly. You can't, you know, control it.
Yeah.
But occasionally, he will offer to summon one of the gods into his shop for you to bless you again.
That's actually cool.
And if you purchase a blessing, when that purchase option is on the ground, again, that too makes a sound. It's like a little magical sound that keeps playing until you pick it up, if that's what you want. And by the way, and we'll get into this a little bit more too, the characters comment on everything. Every character seems to comment on every single thing.
Zagreus comments on everything.
To a shocking degree. And the reason I bring it up now is because, yes, absolutely, the gods will comment on the fact that you're getting this blessing in Charon's shop, that they were summoned into the shop. They'll comment on that.
Wow. That's hilarious.
So just it just everything. It's amazing. Also, when you go into a room and fight enemies and then win, the thing that drops, whatever your reward for the room is, always drops at your exact position where you won the fight. But even if it didn't, everything that drops also makes a sound.
Yep.
So when it drops, you can hear the sound for that thing, and you can move towards it and get it that way. And once you pick up your reward, there's a little magical fluttery sound, I guess that's what I'd call it, that indicates that the door to the next room has unlocked, and you can go through it. And that comes, again, from the position of that door. So there you go. It gets better. In combat, you can hear, number one, I guess the thing people want to know about the most is you can hear attacks coming your way. And there's actually most attacks, there's a couple of enemies that don't have huge tells, but most attacks have pretty large tells. And the reason for that is because this being a roguelike, you're meant to survive as long as you can. Like, it's not the same.
Defensively.
Yeah. It's not like playing Dark Souls, where the monsters will go all out and try to kill you. I mean, yeah, they're trying to kill you, but to make you feel more like you have a chance at survival if you just don't get hit, every attack has a pretty decent tell in most cases. There's those little tiny, I think they're called pests, that don't have much of a tell. They have a tell, but it's really short. They have like one little tiny growl and they hit you. It's pretty short. Little tiny dudes. But mostly they have a tell, so you can hear every attack coming from positionally, again, where it's going to, you know, come at you from. You can react to that. But even cooler than that, in my opinion, this is the only game that I can think of where you can also hear when new monsters spawn in from the position where they spawn in.
Yep.
I mean,
you can
be preemptive in your defense by, like, for instance, when I use the bow, every time I hear a monster spawning in, I roll away. I dodge away from them to get distance before they even fully spawn in, because that takes time, too. It takes about a second for monsters to spawn in.
Yeah.
But you can hear it the whole time. You can move away, get your distance, and then move in as needed if you're too far out of range, you know. That's how I play with the bow. So all these things, man, all these things basically make Hades playable. Now, I'm not going to say there's no struggle, because there is. The second act of Hades is Asphodel, which is a very, very fiery place, which is full of lava and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And lava's bad. Lava does hurt you. And that sucks. However, this is for you too, Sterlock, because I know you haven't reached this place yet. I can tell you this. Believe it or not, there are actual warning sound effects for when you're close to lava.
Oh my god.
I'm not even kidding. There are actual warning sound effects when you're close to lava. So here's the thing. In combat, it's still going to be tough. Because in combat, you're tempted to move very quickly to avoid attacks, you know, whatever. So it's still going to be tough in combat to avoid lava. When you're not in combat, you can if you're willing to move a little slower in Asphodel, you can move around the lava patches, because there's an actual sound effect that tells you you're close to one.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy, dude?
That's crazy.
It's insane.
The fun thing about combat in general is, so on my first attempt, I made the mistake of just like, I'm just going to like take things slowly and just kind of attack and whatever. Oh man, why aren't I like finding enemies that easily? But then I realized like, no, what they want you to do, they want you to use the crap out of that dash button.
Yep, they sure do.
So basically what you want to do is just like dash around and attack at the same time, and you'll just hit the crap out of stuff. Like,
yeah. Because I believe dashing also gives you a couple of invisibility frames too. So, like, I think there's some frames during a dash where you can't get hurt.
There's also effects, too.
Oh, yeah. There's plenty of dash effects.
Give you dash, like, all kinds of dash. Like, I got one of the Zeus blessings, and I...
The lightning dash?
Gave me the dash. Dash effect.
Yeah. Yep. When you dash, nearby foes will be struck by lightning. Pretty sweet. Pretty sweet.
And then that's kind of when I realized, like, oh yeah, you're meant to really use that dash a lot.
Yeah, I use it a little bit less when I have the bow, unless there's a lot of enemies around.
Yeah,
because I really like the bow and being at range.
I haven't found any other weapons yet. So how does that work? How does like changing weapons work?
All the weapons are actually in your chambers. They are right by Skelly. But the thing is, you have to find the weapons first before Skelly even appears. So, once you have a key, I don't know if you found a key yet, but once you have found one key, you can unlock the first weapon.
Okay.
And they'll be in your chambers on the north side of the room, not where the exit is, the opposite side of the room from there.
Yeah.
That's where they are. Right where the keepsake thing is. That's where the weapons are also.
Right. Because, like, that's, like, right where, like, because before it was, like, right near there. I noticed, like, oh, I need a key.
Yeah, that's the weapons that he's trying to unlock.
Well, I just...
Those are the weapons.
In my last attempt, so I know what I'm doing the next time I load.
Yep. So as soon as you get... as soon as you unlock the first weapon, Skelly will appear and teach you how to use it. Well, just allow you to beat him up with whatever you got. I think the first weapon is always the bow, if I remember correctly.
I think he also always comments on whatever weapon you pick up, too, from what I remember seeing of Blind Ryan's.
Yeah, he does. It's actually, sometimes it's him, sometimes it's you. Your character will also comment.
Yeah, that's what I meant, your character. Exactly.
Yeah, he'll name the weapon when he switches to it.
By the way, I love all the comments that Zagreus has. Like,
yeah.
Both useful and just humorous, like,
yeah there's so much that's useful, though, like so much of it, like
it was so cool when I noticed immediately on my second attempt, like, holy crap, the game remembers what killed you, and yep. Zagreus will remember and comment on it, like, payback, you know, like,
yep,
I killed the thing that killed me, and Hypnos will comment on what killed you, because, like,
I think I'm like Hypnos with his like condescending way of doing it.
I think on my second attempt, I died from like an exploding urn or something. It was like, yeah, move out of the way next time. Huh?
Yeah, he does that kind of thing a lot. Like, oh man, one of those what are they called?
One of those wretched gotcha. Huh?
Yeah. Like wretched thugs, I think they're called, something like that.
Yeah,
one of them slapped you to death again. Maybe you should move out of the way of the slapping next time. Or no. One time he was like, maybe you should talk it out. Maybe that'll work.
I also love that Zagreus can hear the narrator.
Yeah, that's a nice touch too. So there is a narrator. There's a narrator for the listeners out there. There's a narrator that throws in his own comments occasionally on the situation, on like the lore of the area, but totally for some reason can be heard by Zagreus for some unexplained reason. And Zagreus will always comment on what the narrator says.
Yep.
And sometimes I've heard him say, will you just keep it down?
One time he was, he said something, he's like, you know, I can hear you, old man, right?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I want to know if Zagreus knows who the narrator is.
Yeah. I wonder if that's going to, yeah. Like how he's like commenting on the narrator's commenting on, how messy, Zagreus is.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, it's not that bad.
Yep. Yes, it's like, the chambers of the prince are always a mess despite his father's attempts to make him pick everything up. Something like that. It's not word for word. But it's so good, man. Everything is commented. And Sherlock hasn't done this just yet, but for the listeners out there, I want to tell you, this remembering thing applies to the bosses as well. The first boss is Megara, the Fury sister, and she will remember the times she's killed you and the times you've killed her, and will comment accordingly. And she will also comment on subsequent fights. She'll comment even on other things, too, like she'll know what blessings you've received. For instance, and she'll know who's helping you. And, you know, come and be like, okay, well, they're not going to help you this time. Something like that, you know.
Oh, wow.
She believes in herself, that Madara. She does.
Yep.
And she's always very rude to you. Just very rude.
Yep.
She just, she's like, basically she says she'll be happy to send you home in all sorts of painful ways. That kind of thing.
Yep.
Just doing my job, you know. But yeah, dude.
I'd rather have you mad at me than Hades or whatever.
right. Right. Exactly. Yeah, so Hades
so much
is great.
Character in this game. Like, the characters have character, like I said, and just the voice acting is so good.
And there are actually two later on. There are little story segments that take place in the House of Hades that are actually, like, not, like, talking to the characters specifically. They're, like, story segments about you. That are all narrated by the narrator, and you have to go through, you know, different areas of the House of Hades to have him say different things. And
I
don't want to spoil it. Like, important things happen in these segments when they happen. Trust me when I say.
I saw a tiny sort of hint at one where it was probably not really, but like talking about how like, oh, we got to fix the lounge again. Like, oh,
Cerberus tore it up.
Cerberus tore it up because he missed me or whatever.
Yep. He was mourning the lost prince or whatever the narrator says.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a story that happens, that unfolds over a couple of attempts. But that is actually not what I'm referring to. So, like, there are times where... So most of the time, when you go into your chambers, it won't let you click on the bed. Zagreus say, like, I can't sleep right now. Like, I'm wide awake. So, yeah, I'll sleep when I'm dead, something like that. But sometimes, it lets you click on the bed, and Zagreus goes to sleep. And then you wake up the next day, and you have to kind of do a quick day in the life of Zagreus kind of side story.
Oh, wow, that's kind of cool.
That's what I'm talking about. But you're right. There are little stories, too, that develop as you attempt escapes as well.
Like, the house definitely feels lived in.
Yeah.
By character. Yeah.
Like. Definitely. Definitely. In fact, the cleaning of the lounge thing is how you're going to meet Medusa. So there you go.
Nice.
So there you go. A couple more attempts and you should be meeting her.
I love this game, and I've only just scratched the surface of it.
Yep.
I'm almost tempted to... I don't know. I almost want to just get the Switch version and, like, stream the crap out of the Switch version.
Cause... Yeah, I guess we could, because it's still just OCR and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I basically, what I did was I took advantage of the fact that Misty already had the game on her account.
Yeah,
and since I don't use Epic for anything else, she just let me have her account and play Hades on it.
Nice. Well, I'm just saying for purposes of streaming.
Oh yeah.
Because the Switch is easier for me to stream.
That's true. Because you're not set up for PC right now. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. I could get behind that. You know, getting the Switch version. It's going to play the same. So
stream this game, and you know, because I know you're going to stream it tomorrow. But
yep. I will. Well, not tomorrow. Friday, but.
Oh yeah, today was Thursday, but
yeah, yep. I will be streaming this game on Friday. I'm going to talk all about all this stuff again and actually show you guys what all these sound effects mean and what they do and what they are, and yeah, we'll get into it. And yeah, each. By the way, to be clear, I mentioned all the sound effects of things on the ground, but everything also has a very specific sound when you pick things up too. Gems do, keys do, nectar does. All these things have their own sounds. Darkness, even when you pick them up as well. So. Yeah, man. It's just amazing.
It's just another case of accidental accessibility.
Yeah,
we've had two in 1 month.
I know. I know. Maybe
two amazing games in 1 month of accidental accessibility. What is going on?
I mean, maybe Supergiant has been paying attention to, like it makes you wonder, doesn't it? Like,
maybe
is it accidental? I mean, it seems like it is, but is it?
Maybe not. I don't know.
We're in a place now where there's enough intended accessibility to make you wonder.
I feel like, yeah, especially with 13 Sentinels.
Yeah, it kind of makes you wonder.
Just like, maybe.
I mean, why voice the Cloud Thought menu? Why? Yeah. You don't need to.
But, like, enough stuff has happened where I was thinking the other day, like, we didn't do this last year, but I feel like enough crazy things have happened this year, both good and bad, where it might actually be worth doing, like, a year in review.
Yeah, yeah. That actually, maybe we should. Especially with the next gen coming out.
Yeah.
That could be unfolded into that. If like, PS5 has good accessibility features, we could talk about that. And, man, that could be really fun. We should definitely do that.
Yeah, I just had that thought, like, yesterday.
Yeah, that's a good thought. That's a good thought. We should do that. In fact, we should do that on the episode before our year-end break, on that episode.
Yeah,
I feel like we should focus on that.
Yeah.
All right, we'll make that an official plan. There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think that's all I have for accessibility news. I just want to talk about Hades a lot.
Hades is... I love it, and I've barely played it.
Yeah, I've never even escaped once. The furthest I've gotten is a few rooms into Asphodel.
Yeah.
But I know that given time and given, you know, patience and given stuff, given there are some upgrades that are permanent. By the way, you can upgrade some permanent things in the mirror. So it's not just God mode that's helping you. There are some upgrades you can apply over time as well. Yep. Right now I have the reflex upgrade, which allows me to dash twice in the same second instead of once.
Oh, nice.
So that's very helpful. Trust me. It's very helpful. Especially if your dash does something, like the lightning dash or the...
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's super great. With time, I know that I'll get... I really believe that I'll get further. I believe that even with the lava patches that exist in Asphodel, I believe that I'll get further in this game and probably eventually beat it.
Yeah.
Because God mode is forever cumulative. You will just cumulatively take less damage over time.
They even comment, like, they want people to experience the story.
Yeah. And, you know, they couldn't keep you from dying because death is a part of the story.
I saw some site that was talking about God mode. Like, people are praising, even, like, sighted gamers are like, probably like, this is the way to do difficulty. This is amazing. Like,
yeah, yeah. Someone was saying they bought the game even though they weren't going to use God mode themselves, but they bought it because they thought that was so brilliant the way they actually did it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a blast, man. I'm looking forward to Friday to showing off how it works and everything. And we'll see how I do. We're gonna start a new save on Friday, so I'm not going to show off my current save because that'd be a lot of spoilers for some people.
Yeah.
We're going to do a new save. We're going to see how far I get in that save. I don't know if I'll do more than one stream just to show it off or not. I don't know. I guess it'll depend on what the chat thinks, but...
Yeah. I feel like certain Sentinels should probably take most of priority.
Oh, it will. It's absolutely going to. I'm just saying, like, maybe in the future, after all that, I don't know. Maybe I do it again. I don't know. It depends on reactions and stuff. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Yep.
But anyway, I think that's all for accessibility news. So... We're going to do our little outro thingamabob, and then we're going to get on here for this episode. This has been episode 61 of the Breakdown Walls podcast. And remember, we don't have a pun
for 61.
as always, we hope you enjoyed this episode. My good Mr. Luck, PS5 is on the horizon. I mean, it's PS5 news coming out.
Month from Saturday.
Yeah, we're basically a month out. In terms of, like, weeks, number of weeks, we're basically a month out.
Yep.
It's pretty amazing. I can't wait, dude. I can't wait.
Yep.
I'm the hype is just, I'm ready. I don't care what any of the haters have to say. I'm just ready for it.
Yep.
Bring it. I want it. And we'll be ready for it, too, on this podcast, so keep on listening to the show. We appreciate you listening because we appreciate all those people out there that are interested in what we have to say. We love doing this every week. Sherlock and I have both said as much.
Yep.
And we hope you enjoyed as well. As always, feedback is welcome. Comments are welcome. We welcome it. And like I said, anything that you guys have to say about what we talk about, or if you want us to talk about something that interests you, then definitely feel free to mention it. I will say, to be fair, even though I was going to talk about it anyway, because there's no way I wouldn't talk about it, I did get feedback from Blind Ryan this past week that said, hey, you should talk about Hades on this show. And I was like, I mean, okay, there's no way I'm not going to talk about it anyway, but thanks. Thanks for giving, you know, saying that.
Yeah.
You know? I still appreciated that he wanted to hear it on the show. So
yep.
Thank you, Blind Ryan, for that. So feedback, welcome. Ideas, welcome. Suggestions, welcome. Anything, welcome. Check out breakdownwalls.net. You can hear the whole podcast from there. As always, you can be introduced to the Breakdown Walls crew there. You can learn all about us, learn what Breakdown Walls is all about. And check out our Discord server if you'd like to join us there. Everyone's welcome there. And I think that's it. So, episode 62. Who knows what crazy news will come out next week? Probably more PS5 stuff. I'm guessing it's probably... We got the hardware teardown. Now we need the UI teardown.
Yeah.
Everyone's waiting for it. I think it's going to happen. I don't know when. Hopefully next week. Because I'd love to be able to talk about it next week.
Heck yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to do it. Thanks, guys, for listening. And we will see you next time.